If you want to be more involved with the Nonprofit Nook, we now have a Facebook community for listeners where you can help shape the podcast. You can suggest episode topics, answer polls, recommend speakers, and join the conversation with other nonprofit leaders who truly get it. Just search the Nonprofit Nook community on Facebook and request to join. We'd love to have you. Marketing for a nonprofit isn't about selling. It's about messaging. It's how we stay connected with our donors, our volunteers, and the people we serve. It's how we invite new people to become part of our mission. But sometimes it can feel never-ending. There's always another post to write, another story to tell, another update to share. And while I work hard to do all things marketing, there are definitely parts I dread, like creating and scheduling content for social media, or remembering how many times I need to talk about something so people actually hear it. That's where Engie comes in. Engie feels like a marketing partner who really gets me. It helps me figure out what to say, when to say it, and how to engage my audience in a way that feels true to my brand. It even helps me write everything in my voice and puts it all together in one big calendar so I can see how it's all going to play out. I can track what's working, plan what's next, and actually feel confident about my marketing. And I love the extras, like the monthly group coaching calls with experts, the simple social media scheduler, and the AI blog writer that makes creating content so much easier. So if you're ready for marketing to finally make sense, check out the link in the show notes. Trust me, you're going to love it.
So we knew it could be done, and we just wanted to make it as easy as possible. Now, when you do that, when you make that decision, Wendy, to, okay, I'm going to expand outside of my, let's call it control, right?
Yes.
Or what seems to be outside of my control, which means you're going to bring other people into your organization. There's pros and cons to that, right? Pro obviously means you're going to affect and reach more people and serve your mission on a broader scale, which is extremely awesome. But what you need to realize is when you bring other people into your organization, right, they're going to bring all sorts of, number one, all sorts of new ideas, new thoughts. Some are great, some are not. Some you've talked to and thought about a million times, some are brand new. You know, the first and foremost, most important thing when you do this is understanding that you got to make sure everybody knows one thing that's very clear. What is our mission? And we will not add to or take away.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Nook, the podcast for nonprofit leaders, board members, and community changemakers who want to build stronger, smarter organizations. I'm your host, Wendy Kidd, a longtime business owner and nonprofit leader. And I'm here to bring you real talk, real tools, and real stories to help you thrive in the nonprofit world. I'll be talking with local nonprofit leaders, community changemakers, and experts in everything from board development to fundraising and digital tools, sharing real stories and simple strategies you can actually use. Because running a nonprofit is hard, but you don't have to do it alone. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Nonprofit Nook. Today, I have returning guest, Luke Mickelson, who is the founder of Sleep and Heavenly Peace, the rapidly growing nonprofit behind the mission, No Kid Sleeps on the Floor in Our Town. What began with a single handmade bunk bed has grown into an international movement with more than 400 chapters across 47 states and 4 countries, providing over 350,000 beds for children in need. Drawing from his background in business leadership, athletics, and small-town Idaho roots, Luke has built SHP into one of the most recognizable volunteer-driven nonprofit models in the country. Known for his humans helping humans philosophy, he now helps leaders understand how to scale mission-driven organizations without losing heart, culture, or community impact. A CNN hero and featured guest on NBC Nightly News, Good Morning America, and The Today Show, Luke continues to inspire audiences with practical lessons on leadership, growth, and finding purpose through service. Welcome back, Luke.
Wendy, it's great to be back.
I'm so happy you agreed to come talk again. I loved everything you had to say on the last podcast, and I could not wait to talk more about how in the world you have 400 chapters. So thank you for saying yes.
Of course, my pleasure. This is my favorite topic.
I love it. I love it. Well, I want to dive into, give us a little background, because I know that it was in 2019, I think, that you were on Mike Rowe's Facebook Watch show, the Returning the Favor. Right. And that was kind of your biggest, your national moment right then, right?
That was the mega. Yeah, it was the beginning. Well, the way the show works is someone nominates you. And so someone nominated me somewhere in mid early 2017. Now, the funny thing about that is the beginning of 2017, I made a trip to California to go see a buddy. No, that's not true. Just before that, I went to California for a business trip. Well, my buddy, who I've known for a long time, lived in San Diego, and I went and saw him. Well, in this meeting, which was kind of random happenstance that I even, you know, I forgot he was down there. I was down for work, blah, blah, blah. Hey, let's go to dinner. Come over, blah, blah, blah. That's kind of how it worked. Well, he was interested in what I was doing. You know, I was building beds for kids back home, blah, blah, blah. He says, I work for a big company. Maybe we do philanthropic efforts. Would that something we could do? Blah, blah. And I'm like, absolutely. Actually, I got one better. Why don't you just start a chapter in San Diego? We don't have anything down here. And keep in mind, the only chapters we have at the time were Boise and Twin Falls, you know, and the chapters had been around for a long time. So it's kind of it wasn't the first time, but it was very soon in relative in starting chapters that the San Diego chapter even started. So now fast forward, I'm heading to this, I'm actually taking my kids to Disneyland, right? And in the meantime, I kind of worked this around this trip to go down to do this new chapter in San Diego, their very first build, right?
Okay.
Now, while all this is going on, in the background of Luke Mickelson's professional life, because I still had a full-time job, you know, my employer, who actually was my stepdad, or is my stepdad, great guy, started getting a little worried that I was spending a lot of time on Sleep Family Peace. And he wasn't wrong. You know, he wasn't wrong. I was using my own vacation time to do it and stuff like that. But, you know, any employer that's got an employee that's so heavily, you know, interested and invested in something that's not his work, right? Any employee is going to like raise their eyebrow. So he heard and found out, and I didn't like broadcast it, but I didn't lie about it, that I'm going to San Diego after this LA Disney trip with my friend or with my family to go help this chapter start. And he's like, and I remember he called me and he's like, I didn't know this is getting to the point where you're starting chapters in other states. And I said, well, you know, I kind of tried to dumb it down a little bit. You know, I was like, well, you know, okay, it's a friend of mine and blah, 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 you know. And he says, this might be becoming a problem. Well, when you first hear that, you get scared as crap. I mean, this was my income. This is my livelihood, right? And we had a serious talk, and you know, and I at that time just it was good. It happened right then. This was like, oh, I don't know, March-ish, something like that.
Okay,
maybe February. And I said, like, I called my buddies up. I had two friends that were really part of SHP helping me out. One was Jordan Allen, who is now our executive director, by the way, was the chairman of the board for long, and another buddy, Carl Weeks, who's not talked about actually a lot in Sleep Family Peace, but a very, very intricate part of starting SHP. So I called these guys up and said, hey, listen, guys, I don't know what to tell you. My boss is kind of breathing down my neck. And they knew kind of the history of what was going on there. Of course, shared it with them. I said, I got to step back. Like, I could be in trouble here. And so I kind of like passed the reins on to these guys. That lasted for, I kid you not, 2 days. I couldn't take, you know, I just couldn't, like, the thought.
I shouldn't laugh, but I completely understand.
You get it? Like, you're like, I just, the feeling and the thought of losing that, which was my identity at the time. I mean, still, you know, Sleep Family Peace and the founder, you know, they become, your identities become mixed. It didn't last very long. And I finally called and said, you know what? I don't care. I don't feel like I'm infringing on my work, and I'm still the top performer and all this stuff, right? So I kind of justified it that way. So we went on, right? Well, knowing that I had this kind of weight of my job and if there was any sort of information that got out that we were expanding and I was still much a part of it, it was going to be a problem, you know? Well, so now comes returning the favor, right? So, and how this works is someone nominates you. Well, a buddy of mine, actually my former brother-in-law, nominated me and I get selected. Now, I don't know I get selected, right? So they just pick a person, they select them, and then they randomly call them from some ghost, you know, pseudonym, basically, and says, hey, you know, you're Luke was sleeping on the piece. We'd like to do they called it a magazine article, like an internet magazine article. You know, this is 2018, well, 2017 rather, sorry. And so I'm like, I don't know what that was. Sounds weird. Okay, great, blah, blah, blah. And so really what they were doing was just vetting me, right? Is this guy a cool guy? Is he says who he is? Can he talk coherently? I mean, you know, they wanted to find out who I am. Well, went great. And then it was done. I was like, oh, great. I guess the interview's over and blah, blah, blah. So a couple months go by. And then my buddy Jordan gives me a call. And he says, well, even before that, the chapter president says, randomly out of nowhere, he says, oh, Luke, you have no idea what's about to happen. And I was like, what? And he's like, oh, I shouldn't have said anything. And then he just dropped it. And I was like, well, that was kind of
goodness. See, this was what I was going to ask is, did you prepare for this?
Well,
so, yeah.
No idea. Right. Now, what was going on is they had let the organization, Jordan, this my buddy Scott, and some other people know Luke has been selected and Sleeping on the Piece has been selected. This is what's going to happen. Don't tell him. So I'm flying in the dark, right? And all of a sudden I get this call from my buddy Jordan, who's at the time chairman of the board. And he says, Luke, I got to ask a favor. I'm like, what? And he's like, you need to take November 2nd, 12th rather, and to like 14th off. It was two work days. He says, you need to take them off. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
He's like, you know why. It's SHP style. I mean, he knew what I was going to be facing. And I said, oh, he says, I know, but I'm telling you right now, you have to take it off. Now, if it was anybody else, Wendy, this is my buddy I've known for 40 plus years. I mean, you know, we've done everything together, right? Best friends. If it was anybody else, I might have questioned it quite a bit more because we're talking about my job here, you know?
Yeah.
Making good money. And so when he said that, I'm like, oh, crap. I mean, yay, but also, oh, crap. And so yeah. I went into
my... We can be our worst enemies at times.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So I went into my employer and I, you know, trust me, I had this game plan of trying to play this down as much as I could, knowing how he felt and knowing probably how this would turn out. And it turned out exactly how I thought it would, right? He didn't take it very well. Now, at first I was really bitter about that, actually for a while. And he was too, very bitter about that. But now as an employer and as employee and you know, as a grown business as myself, 100% get where he's coming from, right? Totally justified. Yeah. Here's one of his top performers, vice president of operations or sales, and going to buy the company. And now he's, you know, invested in something else. You know, that no founder that's going to pass the baton is going to be interested in something like that. So he basically said, because I went in, I said, hey, I need to take these 2 days off. I've got 2 days vacation. I'm going to use them, but I need to take them off. And he says, is this SHP related? I said, yes. And that's when, you know, anyways, long story short, I had a week. He gave me a week because this is on Friday. I kind of waited to the weekend. And he says, he gave me a week. He says, why don't you think about it? Well, I mean, I kind of already knew. My wife and I had already talked about this. Decision's already been made. I came in on Monday and I went in with my last plea. And I just said, listen, I will make sure that, you know, my performances are up and blah, 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 blah. And I could tell, you know, that it was done, right? You know, the decision had been made. And so I packed my stuff up. You know, and
wow,
and had to quit my job. It was the best thing, obviously, that ever happened. So the 12th came around, they showed up at my house, and I started getting some emails before this saying, hey, we're going to come over to your house and we're going to bring a film crew from New York and all this. And, you know, I'm going, there's more than one of you? Like, this is crazy.
Right.
I'm a farm kid from Idaho. What's going on here? And there's more than one camera and you're coming from New York. I mean, all these things were like, what is going on here? This is weird. Like, this is, and I remember telling my wife, this doesn't seem like just a little internet magazine interview, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So they show up and they come over to my house the night before and interview, or actually it was just to get to know us. I met Sarah, who was the producer. It was her first time producing on this show, on Returning the Favor, right? It was her very first episode she ever did. So it's kind of cool. Super bubbly. In fact, she's pregnant right now. She's going to have a baby. Super, super awesome. So the next day, and meanwhile, all of this planning is going behind the scenes behind me. I don't know. No one's telling me anything, right? And the funny thing is here I quit my job because of an event that's coming up that I don't know what's going on. I know it just has to be about SHP. I know it's important. And then all of a sudden, I'm excited. I quit my job. I'm excited. We're gonna get going, and I'm gonna make you know cover the world with SHP.
Do all the things.
Yeah, yeah. I'm emailing everybody and calling everybody, and no one will talk to me. No one. You're all on this shutdown, lockdown.
So strange.
Don't talk to Luke. I remember going, what the heck's going on? I quit my job.
Why are you people not responding?
Yeah, you don't know what's going on. I mean, it was silence. There's crickets, right?
Mm-mm.
And I just had to keep hold on that my buddy Jordan and trust him that he knew what he was talking about, right?
Right.
So they show up, and they is meaning the SHP group, Jordan and Carl and Scott and these guys, had scheduled and flew in all the new chapter presidents. We had about six of them, six or seven of them. Well, actually been five because there were seven chapters. We had five chapters fly in from the area, you know, the one from San Diego, one from Minnesota, one from all the way over in Hartford, Connecticut. They show up because we're going to do this build training day. We've never had a training day for chapter presidents that just started. So that's what this was supposed to be. So I'm going into this going, oh, sweet. This is awesome. You know what? It's kind of funny. I've got this internet magazine coming in. I've got these chapter presidents. Maybe we could all meet and do this thing. But, you know, I'm like, I'm being led down this road, by
the
way.
Yeah, you are.
And I think it's all my idea. So we're like, oh, awesome. That's a great idea, Luke. Let's do that. Meanwhile, they've already planned all this, right?
Right.
So here we show up. We get this build going, right? And it's super fun because I'd never met these people. Like, not all of them, right? These are just people I've talked to on the phone that wanted to start chapters, and we talked them through it and blah, blah, blah. Now they're here in Twin Falls, Idaho. Actually, Kimberly, Idaho is where we were at, a little small town just a couple miles away. And I'm teaching them all the great things of how to build beds and what to watch out for and doing all this, blah, blah, blah. It was awesome, blah, blah, blah. And then there's film crews walking around and filming it. And I was, oh, this is going to be awesome, blah, blah. And then I get a tap on the shoulder. And I turn around and there's Mike Rowe.
I mean, I would have been like, what
do you do? And you know, I instantly, I mean, how can you not who he is? I instantly recognize him. Right. I don't know how long I sat there. I watched the video a bunch of times, obviously, and it was pretty quick, but it felt like a million years when I'm like, what? And it's funny, Wendy, all of these things that were happening, you know, months before, all the quietness, all the secrecy, all the don't say this, in a half a second, it all made sense.
Yeah, you were like, oh, like, I get it.
Okay,
I get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mike Rowe, what are you doing here? And meanwhile, in my head, I'm like, okay, this is all making sense. I understand why Jordan felt like this. I understand why all this stuff, right? And meanwhile, I still don't know the premise of the show. I just know Mike Rowe's here, and I'm like, what are you doing here? Like, this is cool.
What's up?
And I will say that the day or the morning before all this happened, they were interviewing me at this warehouse, and again, remember, there's three or four cameras. There's 12 people from New York here, you know. And it's funny; it's middle of like November. It's 25 degrees outside. These guys from New York are wearing sandals and shorts, and I'm like freezing to death, right? And you can't have a fire because it crackles too much for the mics to pick up. So you're freezing your butt off getting this interview done. You know, and I remember I just kept thinking, and I was telling Sarah, I'm like, now what is this for? Like, this is just an internet magazine. Poor gal. You know, she's trying to lie to me. And this gal doesn't lie, like, doesn't have a bone in her body that lies. You know, she's just a super happy kid. And I'm a salesman. I could read people pretty good. It was obvious she was struggling trying to tell me what this is about. So, yeah. And she knew she was bad at it. She knew I was reading that. So we had this really untold, like, I don't know, face on each other. Like, okay, I'm going to ask a question and I know you're going to lie to me. You know, I'm going to ask a question and you know that you're going to lie to me. So we just had this kind of like, I guess we're not going to ask each other these questions, right? You know,
sure,
we'll just move on. And
this
is going on all day. And so when Micro showed up, that was one other thing. I was like, okay, yeah, this is exactly what I thought. Way more than just an internet interview, right? Magazine. And so they do this show. And if you haven't seen the show, you need to see it. It's a great show. They did 100 episodes. And the purpose of returning the favor was to find people doing good in the community, highlight what they do, and then give them something, whether it's money or a car or supplies. In our case, we needed a warehouse. We had this real old warehouse that was this wonderful couple donated to us to use for free. It was awesome. It saved our bacon, but it was run down. It was old. And so Mike Rowe and the team gave us a warehouse to use for 4 years.
Wow.
And that was the surprise. And so later on, you know, a couple of years down the road, when the show, I think it went into its fourth year, they were having their 100th episode and they actually won an Emmy for, I don't know what category, online series or something, right? Like that. Well, they won an Emmy, and their 100th episode, they did a big collaboration of all the episodes, and they kind of highlighted, you know, 10 seconds here, this and that of all these episodes, till they came to the number one episode Micro picked, because it amplified exactly what he wanted the show to do. People copying what the founder and the organization was doing. And he selected Sleep in Heavenly Peace. Because
we
clearly emphasized and done, you know, when the show aired in the beginning of 2018, February 2018, we had 7 chapters. By the end of 2018, we had 135. I mean, we just blew up.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And I mean, we were putting on chapters, 30 chapters a month. It was crazy, right? We put on about 30 chapters about every 6 months now, but we just blew up. And so it did exactly what he wanted it to do. And you know, they gave us a warehouse, which is awesome, but really what they gave us that was so special. And I remember Sarah saying, Luke, your life will never be the same. And I'm like, huh, okay. Yeah, whatever, you know. No, literally, it never, you know, I went from that to a CNN hero, to being a Lay's potato chip bag cover, to be on Good Morning. I mean, a farm kid from Idaho, right? Who gets thrown into this whirlwind world of I don't know, notoriety. I don't know what you call it, but, you know, that was a challenge by itself, you know, trying to, knowing, especially as a founder, you know, you have this deep responsibility of showcasing, because you're, you know, the charity at the beginning stages is centered around you. You develop the culture, you answer all the questions, you're the spokesperson, you know, you know, people look at the charity by looking at the founder, right?
Right.
That'll shift. And it has shifted for me, which is good, good and bad, but good. But you know, when you're on these stages like CNN Hero, where there's 9 million people watching you, and you go on CNN, you know, or you go on Good Morning America, you know, and you're with these celebrities, and you know, you have this weight of wanting to say the right thing, do the right thing, don't miss on a great opportunity. It's like having an elevator pitch that you don't want to screw up, because if you screw up, 9 million people see it.
Right. Yeah. A little bit of pressure there.
A little bit of sweatshop. You know what I'm saying?
A little bit. Well, and it's awesome that you were able to harness the power of that exposure that they gave you, right? And that's obviously because you all had already done a chapter before. So let's talk about that, because that's really what I wanted to get to today for my nonprofits, is for them to understand, what does it look like to have another chapter? Like, what does that even mean? Yeah. How do you get there?
Well, first of all, I knew if I was going to really make a dent in solving child bedlessness, solving, you know, what our mission's about, and I was going to do that across the country, it wasn't going to be done by me. You know, it wasn't going to be done by people in Twin Falls. We knew we had to build a platform that was scalable, easy to do, easy to enter, relatively inexpensive to start, right? When we had talked to other nonprofits, we talked to other nonprofits that had a chapter type model, right? They wanted to grow, but their barrier to entry was way too big, right? You know, it was either way too expensive, cost $100,000 to start a chapter, right? You know, and or you needed a certain specific expertise or, you know, whatever. And some charities just have that boundary. We didn't, and we also knew that, you know, hey, we wanted, I don't know, Joe the plumber, you know, versus Joe the judge, you know, we wanted it to make it as easy as possible for anybody in any level of education, level of experience, time, you know, season of their life, whether they're young and still have kids, or maybe they're in the middle of their career, or maybe they're retired. You know, we took all of these things into consideration, and we knew we could do it because we did it. You know, I did it. Jordan did it. Scott did it. All these people that ran chapters, they all had young kids. They all had still full-time jobs, and we did it. So we knew it could be done, and we just wanted to make it as easy as possible. Now, when you do that, when you make that decision, Wendy, to, okay, I'm going to expand outside of my, let's call it control. Right?
Yes.
Or what seems to be outside of my control, which means you're going to bring other people into your organization. There's pros and cons to that, right? Pro obviously means you're going to affect and reach more people and serve your mission on a broader scale, which is extremely awesome. But what you need to realize is when you bring other people into your organization, right, they're going to bring all sorts of, number one, all sorts of new ideas, new thoughts. Some are great, some are not. Some you've talked to and thought about a million times, some are brand new. You know, the first and foremost, most important thing when you do this is understanding that you got to make sure everybody knows one thing that's very clear. What is our mission? And we will not add to or take away. So we build and deliver beds. That is it. And it's not a hard stretch to realize, you know, Wendy, you're a big-hearted person. Can you imagine if you just come into the organization, you walk into a house to deliver a bed to a child, he doesn't have a desk. He doesn't have a chair. You know, they don't have a TV. You've got four of them back home. You know, of course, what are you going to be, inspired and wanting to do? You want to help, right?
Yeah.
So we had a lot of people come back. Luke, we delivered a bed and they don't have this. And I'm just going to run over and grab this and take this to them and do this. And I said, no, you can't. I mean, can you know how hard that is to say to someone, I'm big hearted too. I would love to help. But that is the hardest thing. But the single most important thing, a chapter that wants to grow and scale has to maintain. Because if you allow that to happen, the floodgates are open. You know,
that mission creep will kill you.
Kill you. It's the fastest killing thing in the nonprofit space.
For sure.
Yeah.
What does a chapter actually look like?
So a chapter present is made up of, when we first started, if you fogged a mirror, you could become a chapter. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, that's a nice way of saying no qualifications.
pretty much, right? In fact, we were putting on that 125 whatever chapters that first year. I only rejected one application. He came to training, and the guy, I say this very humbly, not humbly, very empathetic and sympathetic. The guy was just weird. I don't know what else to tell you. He was just a weird guy. He wasn't going to be successful. So I didn't want to put that on his shoulders. But, you know, of Sleep in Heavenly Peace has trained over 470 chapters, but we only have about 407 or 10, something like that, active chapters. Now, for various reasons, chapters, you know, they break apart, right? Whether the chapter president moves or, you know, most of the time it's some sort of level of burnout. Mm-hmm. But I'd say the first 20 or 30 chapters that we lost never even bought a tool. Mm-hmm. And that was because there probably were more volunteers. They were people that got hot and bothered and excited about what they saw in the returning the favor, but weren't ready or prepared for what actually it takes to be a chapter president. And we weren't ready and prepared to teach them and to let them know what it did involve. You know, we were still trying to figure it out ourselves. So now we it's been 8 years. We've got it down, right? So we know, you know, you've got to have more than, we require 4 people to be a part of the chapter. We require at least 2 people to come to training. Our training programs are much, much more robust. It used to be just me standing in front of them for 8 hours with a PowerPoint. I mean, talk about, you know, death by slides. Now it's, you know, we've got an online university that they go through training even before they show up, right? When they show up. They have all the supplies. We have teams now of grant writers and marketers and marketing companies and chapter support people, whereas it was either just volunteers or it was, you know, one person putting on 3 of those hats, right? So when it become a chapter president, the biggest thing is, number one, we want to make sure that you understand what you're getting into, right? You know, it's not for the faint of heart. You know, little grandmas can do it. It's not necessarily a physical thing, but it is a little bit of a mental thing, and it's certainly a commitment thing. And so we require that, and we know you can't do it yourself, and we require multiple people. But outside of that, there's not much else that we feel is that we have seen that doesn't qualify someone.
Gotcha. So is it just as simple as a team of volunteers that want to do what you do? They don't have a whole lot of management involved there other than just maybe volunteer management?
So we take all of the administration mumbo jumbo away from them. You know, again, that's another one of those barrier to entries, right? We operate under the same EIN number. So they don't have to go get their own EIN number. They don't have to get with their insurance. They don't have to get their own bank accounts. They don't have to get all their process and procedures and softwares that follow up and the donor retention programs and the CRMs. They don't have to do any of that, right? Literally, they show up, they get trained on how to run a nonprofit in regards to their responsibilities, right? They don't need to know how to file on a 990 because we do that for them. They don't need to know how to, you know, file a COI other than the process that we give them. So we take all that away. We tell them to focus in on 3 things: raising money, building beds, and delivering beds. Those are the 3 things we want them to focus in on, because that's really where the heart of the mission is. And quite frankly, that's all they want to do anyways, right?
So sure.
What it provides, you know, we're finding chapter presidents, there's a common denominator underneath all of them, right? One of them is, it does satisfy that little entrepreneur want to start a business itch, right?
Yes.
It does scratch that a little bit. We've noticed that. It does provide meaningful activities, let's say, for retirees that, you know, enjoy retirement for about a year and then they're ready to either kill each other or they're just bored as heck and they want to give back, right? It scratches that itch, you know. So there's some things that both planning and lucky, I guess, that we fell into that we're finding people enjoy. But ultimately, really, you know, when you think about what we serve, which is children without beds, right? And you get to use power tools to build these beds, you know, that's a category that most, but a lot of people that are searching for a service project can get behind pretty easily, you know?
Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. And I love that you took that off of their plate, all that admin stuff. I think that negates a lot of the kind of politics that goes along with nonprofits sometimes.
It's probably, and I do some nonprofit training and consulting. Mm-hmm. That's one of the biggest troubles and worrisomes that people have starting an opera. I have the same thing. You know, I was like, hey, just don't send me to jail. Like, I don't want to go to jail. I want to make sure I'm doing this right, you know? And when you have someone that's doing it for you, you know, and they've clearly know how to do it because they've been doing it for 14 years, you know, and everything's copacetic, then that takes that away, you know, and that's one of the biggest heartaches, one of the biggest heartburns rather that you know, people that are starting nonprofits or wanting to start a nonprofit worry about. And I don't blame them. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you manage those chapters? You mentioned having a team. How does that work?
So we first start out knowing when we started growing and scaling like we were, like any organization, you got to backfill positions, right? We knew that, okay, we now have 100 chapters, right? We can't be, you know, one guy, myself, can't manage that. So we split the country up into regions. We have 9 regions that we've split it up in, and each region started out with what we call a chapter support lead, then turned into an RSL, which is a regional support lead. We've kind of fallen back down into the chapter support lead. But basically what it is a chapter support lead acts as like a manager. They cover a certain geographical distance, and it's normally based on the number of chapters within that geographical area. You know, it's usually about 20 or 30 chapters. Once they bounce over that, then we look to start divvying out and creating another chapter support lead for that level. And so these chapters now, I don't want to say report, but yeah, report and seek guidance and help and, you know, share their numbers and data and things like that with their chapter support lead, who then the chapter support lead reports to the director of chapter operations and his team. He's got 3 or 4 people on his team, and they're strictly focused on maintaining the healthy, the healthy processes for a chapter, how to become a chapter, how to tell whether a chapter is flailing or failing, thriving or not. What are the things and the reasons why a chapter is successful and not, and then how can we, you know, analyze the data and make them better, you know? And so, so that's kind of on the chapter support side. That's how that's structured on. And we, you know, we, of course we have a finance team, we have a marketing team. We've like 6 or 7 grant writers now that help chapters do what needs to be done on the grant side. You know, listen, it sounds big and it is, don't get me wrong. It sounds big and hairy. It is. But not too long ago, it was just a couple of people, you know? So scalability, it takes someone that has a vision. It takes someone that can look ahead and go, you know, the best question was asked to me was actually by a guy named Eldon, who's actually on our board now. He said, Luke, you're fine and dandy at 50 chapters. What about 500? You know, my first thought was like, oh, okay, Eldon, calm down. 500 chapters, whatever. Right? Yeah, yeah.
I can only laugh because of your numbers now. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Oh, exactly. We're almost there, right? You know, not too long ago, right? 6 years ago. You know, but it got me thinking. You know, okay, if that were true, almost sarcastically, I'm like, well, if that were true, then we'd probably need to do this, that, and the other. Well, guess what? We're doing this, that, and the other. You know, so
yeah,
and that's just, you know. So now I've learned and my leadership has evolved through all of this as well, understanding the scalability, you know, and how that can change culture, which is a dangerous thing, and how that can, you know, change the dynamic of how things are structured, right? You know, you've got chapter support leads, you've got a grants team. How does a grants team interact with chapters or don't interact with chapters? How do they, you know, and you got to think about it. You got chapters that are lapping over top of each other. How do they share grant space? How do they share donation space when you got 3 chapters going after the same company? You know, there's some things you got to, you don't plan on, or you don't really think about it until it's sometimes in your face. And I used to tell my managing team, listen, we're on a highway going pretty fast and there's potholes ahead of us. If you don't want to hit it, you better learn how to fill it quick, you know, and that's just how we operated. And now, you know, we've got, I don't know, 30 people on staff. And 30 more as contracted stipend. We have a very good structure. You know, we don't even see the potholes now hardly because we're so proactive, and which is beautiful. And that's why we grew so fast early on for a lot of reasons. COVID hit, kind of slowed us down for a couple of years, but now we're growing at not the same rate, but a very stable and sustainable rate that we can manage, you know, and it's comfortable. It's not, you know, you'd make, for example, we put on 100 chapters, we broke the bank. I mean, we couldn't get into bank accounts because we had 100 bank accounts trying to come up on your online banking. It ain't going to work, right? Those are things the bank didn't even know that was possible.
The things you're going to find. Yeah, you're going to test those limits.
Mm-hmm. And that was a scary time, Wendy. There was $250,000 that these strangers sent to Idaho, this kid in Idaho who put it in supposedly a bank that they have zero access to. Oh my God. Talk about some sleepless nights. I mean, it was rough, you know, trying to figure this out and having problems pop up that no one knew would happen. And I mean, there's all sorts of those wonderful, horrible, but turned out great stories that just make up our history. And they're beautiful. They're fun. And, but ultimately, you know, to your original question, scaling and growing outside of your own area is both wonderful and terrible at the same time. And I'd say probably the best advice I give you is don't get in a hurry. You know, be patient, right? Mm-hmm. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. You don't need to put on 100 chapters. I wouldn't recommend putting on 100 chapters your first year, right?
Right.
I look back, we probably lost 40 of those 100, that's those first 100 chapters. And I feel bad about that. How successful could have they been had I just had them wait 6 months? You know, let us catch our breath. Let us take our breath and figure out.
You know, if Sarah and Mike had just told you what was happening.
Jerks. Let's blame them. Let's blame them. I like that. Oh, it's funny. I met with Mike a couple of times, done a couple other things with him. And, you know, he still, I mean, we attribute a lot to him. I mean, a lot of our success to him. And he's such a humble guy but super happy for us. I mean, he couldn't be more happy to see the growth that we've seen. And we always felt like it's a little bit of an obligation. I mean, you know, Mike Rowe shows up. We know why he's there. We know what the show's all about. And I mean, we worked hard from the time it filmed, which was in November, to the time it aired. We have about 3 months. We didn't even have like a store on our warehouse to buy a t-shirt. I mean, my gosh, we were so rudimentary in our softwares and our procedures and processes that, I mean, we didn't have a training program. We knew that was coming. It was a tough 3 months. It's probably a good thing I quit my job because I wasn't going to work on it.
Right. There's going to be no time for that. No time for that. So I'm going to ask the question I think I would hear a lot from nonprofits based on this. Because I hear it a ton from business owners because they never want to hire because they don't trust the people, right?
Right.
What do you do when you have a chapter that goes awry? You know, they're not raising the amount of money you need, or, you know, they're having that mission creep. Like, what do you do? How do you handle that?
Well, you know, first of all, before they even become a chapter, you got to make sure you have pretty stalwart policies and procedures in place, right? You know, and they don't have to be mean. They don't have to be strong in the sense that you do this, you're going to get slapped. No, you know, they just have to make sense, you know?
Definition of whatever you're doing. Yeah. This is the expectation.
And I was just going to say, you got to manage their expectations to come into. And I think one of the skills I have is recognizing, Wendy, listen, I get it. I know that heart of yours wants to go in there, do it. And if this was any other time or place, I'd grab that microwave and go in with you.
Yep.
But the reasons why we don't is this, and the reasons why we don't is that. And just bring them along with you.
Yes.
In the growth of, you know, that's why we call it the SHP family. Because I was not afraid to tell anybody, listen, I have no business starting and running a nonprofit because I don't know what I'm doing. But what I do have is a passion for it, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get it done. Just be patient with me. I would love your input. People want to be heard. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily,
oh, absolutely.
They don't necessarily need to be followed or need to have their advice followed. They just want to be heard, you know? And so, you know, you got to be open to them. But if you do have one that just absolutely won't follow you or you can tell that they're going to be doing their own thing, this is hard to hear. And I'm talking to myself 10 years ago, Luke, just get rid of them.
Yep.
Just send them on their way. The analogy that there's a cancer is exactly that. They will, as much as you want and wish and work with them and hope and blah, 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 you know, you give them a chance. But then, listen, they have a different passion, and that's okay. Encourage them to go follow their own passion. We've had four or five chapter presidents that started their own bed building charity. They build almost the exact same bed, you know, and I can take that two ways. You know, I can take it very personally and get upset. And there's some people in our organization that do, trust me.
Yeah.
You know, or you look at it and say, hey, listen, good luck. You're helping kids. Good for you. Go after it, you know.
Absolutely.
And let things lie where they lie. You know, people have their own passions. And if someone wants to take it on themselves, honestly, Wendy, most of the time it's because it's about them, not about the organization that, you know,
absolutely
create. But, you know, so they'll sealing up, right? You know, they'll stop at some point. And they all have. They all, and a few of them haven't gone anywhere. But, you know, ultimately, you know, you got to weed that cancer out quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine that's a lot easier considering the business model that you've laid out with you guys handling the finances. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot easier to not have to untangle and redo and all that.
Yeah, it comes down to, it's like, I know this is going to sound harsh, and I mean this in the nicest way, but you know, we set up a process and a platform where we maintain some good control over things, right? Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. You know, if you've got a rogue guy out there that's building beds with chop saws and chainsaw, I mean, I'm being a little exaggerating here, but you know, they're building really unsafe and you say no, 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 and he has access to all his, and he's doing that wrong. If he has access to all his money, I guarantee you he's going to be doing something else wrong too. You know?
Oh, true.
So
absolutely.
Especially when it comes to finances, those things you have to lock down. Those things you have to have policies and procedures where that could, or if it does happen, it gets caught super quick. I'm telling you right now, Wendy, this seems crazy. We have thousands, if not, think about this, tens of thousands of transactions that happen on a month or even a weekly basis, tens of thousands. We have three finance gals that review every receipt. And you would think, and I'm like, gosh, guys, how do you see that I accidentally bought a, I don't know, a beer on my lunch? I mean, how do they see that? Like it's a $3 beer that was on a tab of all sorts of, and they catch, you know, it's beautiful how they've got it set up for us. But that's important, right? And now, I mean, there is not a cent that comes in or out of SHP that we don't account for. I mean, literally not a penny. And now that you have that process, that procedure, and better yet, that culture and understanding from your chapter presidents, right? Which they need to have that confidence. You know, when you're sitting in, I don't know, Maine, you know, BFE Maine, running a chapter, you've never met any of these people, you know, in Idaho and wherever that is managing SHP, and you just send them a $40,000 check from your, you know, your buddy's company. That's a lot of trust.
Yeah.
And they've got to know and got to trust that dollar's just as sacred as a $40 check from little grandma, which it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Luke. This is exactly what I wanted to be able to share with people. Is there anything else that you want to make sure we say as a takeaway from this
go? We dove into returning the favor probably a little more than we should, but it's a fun story. No,
it's a great story. I'd want to know all about it.
Thanks for having me on. Listen, if anybody out there needs help, like if you're a nonprofit, you want to scale, you're up against it, or even if you are at a I deal with nonprofits that are 40 years old, right? And they're floundering. They just don't know why they're stuck. They can't figure out why to get past this and past that, you know? I'm happy to help. I'm happy to be a part of that and work with you and give you some thoughts and some ideas. Because, you know, listen, at the end of the day, number one, we're all humans just helping humans, you know? And in my case, they're little humans. And in your case, they're old humans. And in your case, they're dog humans. And, you know? We're all here to help. And trust me, there are just some little tweaks that people can make to their organization that change it. I'll give you one example. If you give me some time here, after I was a CNN hero, we went and they took these 10 CNN heroes, flew them to LA, and we had some nonprofit world-class training. It's called the Annenberg Alchemy Foundation. Just awesome training. The very first thing they taught, we sat down. Luckily, I was able to bring two other people. You could only usually bring one, but I was able to bring Jordan and his wife, Heather, who we were kind of the management of SHP at the time. He was the chairman, vice chair, and I was the executive director. Well, whatever that meant, because we didn't know what executive director really meant at the time. The very first thing they taught was the importance of what is an executive director and the executive team's role, and what is the board's role. That one lesson, and I kid you not, it was an hour, maybe an hour lesson that they talked about. It completely changed SHP overnight. We now understood why board meetings spent 4 hours and you felt like you didn't do anything and no problems got
solved. Absolutely.
Right? Yes. You understood why there was just challenges and it's just hard to explain in a short period of time, but those are the things I'm talking about. Those are the little tweaks that I've been able to help nonprofits and people that are struggling in their nonprofit to turn it around, to give it some rejuvenation, to give it maybe that business touch that you're missing. So I would love to help. And people can find me at, you know, shpbeds.org or rather you can find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, just type in Luke Mickelson. My email address is luke.mickelson@shpbeds.org. Let me know how I can help.
I love that. Thank you so much, Luke. We appreciate your time. I'm sure the listeners loved this. And I'm sure we'll come up with another topic where we have to talk again for sure.
Let's do it.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Luke. And thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Nook. We're building better nonprofits together. If you found today's episode helpful, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with other nonprofit leaders who need support. Follow the Nonprofit Nook on social media and sign up for our email list for extra tips and updates. You can also visit thenonprofitnook.com to see the show notes and leave a comment telling me what topics you want next. Your feedback shapes the show. See you next time.